News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great last few days of 2024. That's right. We're here at the end. Today is December 28th. This is going to be our last show of 2024. So we hope that you're enjoying it. I hope you had a great Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever you might celebrate this time of year, if you celebrate anything at all. And I hope you're looking forward to a great new year this coming week. We're going to help you wrap up the year by bringing you up to date with everything that's been going on in entertainment and pop culture this year. And joining me to do so, as he does so very often on this show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy these kind of retrospective episodes where we look back at some of the highlights of the year in the world of entertainment. This show is going to be no different. Julio, I hope you had a good Christmas.
Yeah, very nice. You?
Yeah, it was good. I don't know about you and maybe some of our listeners, but I feel like when Christmas is over, I'm over Christmas. It's one of those things. There's a lot of buildup, and we spend a lot of time in the Christmas season, and then right when it's over, I'm kind of done with it. However, we did take a trip to Miami this year for Christmas, which was very nice. My wife wanted to go and check out South Beach, so we went down that and spent the holidays in a kind of tropical environment. Weather was beautiful the whole time. Went to a place called Raccoon Island. We went to Gianni Versace's mansion to have dinner one night, and that was opulent and amazing. And I got to say, the food was really good. And that I just wanted to briefly touch on last week before I went to Miami, and we even touched on this a little bit in last week's show because it was something that caught my attention. You were kind of teasing Steve about the fact that he was in Miami eating Cuban food.
Right.
So while this is happening, my friend Ian is also simultaneously on Facebook posting that Tampa is hands down a better foodie destination than Miami. And so I've got both of my friends on Facebook talking about how Tampa specifically is better than Miami. I had food in Miami. It was amazing. But it was Italian food. So, I don't really have a good frame of reference.
Well, I mean, nobody's saying that there's not great food in both cities, I don't think. You know, I mean, of course there's great food in Miami. It's a major city. Any major city is going to have some great food in it. My specification was that Cuban food in Tampa is better than the food in Miami. That being said, I mean, I don't know that I've had Italian food in Miami, but I could tell you there's a lot of Italian heritage in Tampa. And Ybor City, which is kind of the heart of Tampa, especially from a culinary standpoint, was really made up of the Cubans and the Italians. And you know, some Spanish influence in there too. Italian food in Tampa is pretty freaking phenomenal, man.
So when we were in Tampa, we went to a restaurant called Columbia.
Oh, yeah, the Columbia is, yeah, that's my grandfather was a maitre d' at the Columbia.
Is that right?
Yes.
That place is awesome. For listeners that might be taking a trip, definitely check that out. And I honestly, different ethnic dishes, I don't know if there's a better way of phrasing that, international dishes there.
Columbia's got some Cuban flavor to it, but it's largely Spanish.
Right. And then where Versace's is Italian, as mentioned. But I would put the food up next to each other. I would not say that Gianni's was like bar none better than the Columbia, because that was a fantastic experience as well. I gotta know, how can one place do a Cuban better than another?
Well, I mean, it's just as simple as the fact that the Cuban sandwich, despite what Miami will try to tell you, was invented in Tampa.
Yeah, but like, the caveman invented the wheel, but I'm pretty sure Ferrari like revolutionized it, you know?
Well, yeah, but that's not the case in this case. Like in this case, I mean, the biggest difference between the Tampa Cuban and the Miami Cuban is salami. Tampa Cuban uses salami. The Miami Cuban does not.
Interesting.
And again,
okay.
It gets back into, you know, the Cuban sandwich was invented in Ybor City. It was invented as something that the cigar, they fed to the cigar factory workers.
Mm.
So, you know, it, again, as I mentioned, you know, there's all this influence in Ybor City. That's the Italian influence in Ybor City. Is that salami?
Yeah,
I mean, if you look at the Cuban sandwich, like the traditional Cuban sandwich uses Swiss cheese. Swiss isn't Cuban.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so there are definitely, you know, outside influences on the Cuban sandwich, but that's the big difference. And that's, it was invented in Tampa. Tampa just does it better.
You know, I didn't even have a Cuban in either of these places.
Yeah,
so I have no dog in this fight other than to give y'all a hard time.
Yeah,
you're repping your city.
Tampa has the only trilingual newspaper in the country. And there's a newspaper that's published out of Ybor City called La Gazzetta. That is published in English within every individual issue. There are articles in English and Spanish and Italian.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the influence there. So, yeah. I mean, I have a little bit, I recognize that I have a chip on my shoulder about Tampa versus Miami, but you know, I grew up there. That's, you know, I lived there for the first 30 years of my life almost. So, you know,
I love it.
Still have family there, still go back, you know, usually at least once a year. So yeah, it's kind of the city that made me, if you will.
If I was going to pick, I'd move to Tampa. Not that Miami's not amazing for what it is, but yeah, there's something about the Tampa that I think I could find more homey for whatever that's worth.
I'll be honest with you. You know, if it was a matter of like living in either place, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know.
I'm good here.
Pensacola
is a pretty good place to live. Like I love going back to visit Tampa, just like I love going to visit New York City. But if I was going to live in the area, I wouldn't live in Tampa. Like maybe St. Pete. Like I could see living in downtown St. Pete, or maybe, you know, some of the outlying areas. But in the city itself, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I think Tampa is up and coming in a way that Miami is a little bit dated, and I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just like architecturally, like the buildings are old in Miami. I have to show you this picture, Julio, where I opened the bathroom of our Hilton Hotel, and it bumped into the toilet. I've never seen a place with a little clearance to open a door, but it was beautiful, really neat experience. I went to this place called Mangoes. That was really cool. So definitely had a good time.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, there's definitely a lot of historic architecture in Tampa too, and there's, you know, just like there is here in Pensacola, you know, where you could see the French. There's a movie that came out a few years ago.
Atlantic Rim, saw it, love it.
No, not Atlantic Rim. I'm going to Tampa here. Atlantic Rim was filmed here. What was the Ben Affleck film that was set in like early Tampa? The
Hollywoodland?
No, it was a mob film, and yeah, there was a lot of mob influence in Tampa in the early days too. I know the stories. We Live at Night. That was it.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see some of that, like the pieces of that are still there. There's been some other films that have been filmed in Tampa over the years, but that's the only one that I can think of that has like that historic perspective, even though a lot of it wasn't actually shot in Tampa. That you can kind of see where some of that influence that continues to this day is there, just the same way we can see it in, like, you know, Seville Quarter in downtown Pensacola. You can see the historic influence that comes there from the French and from the, you know, the New Orleans influence on Pensacola. So yeah, I mean, you know, is what it is, but yeah, I'm always going to big up Tampa over Miami. We got to take a break. We're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And we're going to, the rest of the show, we're going to be breaking down, since it's the end of the year, what we thought were the best films that we saw this year. And we're going to, you know, again, say the best films that we saw. We, neither one of us has been able to see every single film that came out this year. And there's also a lot of stuff that, you know, you're going to hear more about as we get closer. And I know we're going to talk about the Oscars when the nominations come out and everything. You'll probably hear us talk about some other films then. And it'll be because we'll have had a chance to see those films by then, because there's a lot of films like The Brutalist and Sing Sing and September 5 that are in the Oscar conversation that just haven't opened in Pensacola yet. So we haven't had any chance to see them any more than any of you listening have had to see them. So this is, as of, you know, the end of the calendar year, what the films that we've seen that we like the most. That's going to evolve as we get closer to award season, but that's fine. And we're also going to, when we come in from the breaks, we'll be playing some of the biggest hits of the year. That was Sabrina Carpenter, Espresso, which is, as far as I'm concerned, been an unavoidable song this year. So sure, it's not the first time you're hearing that. But let's dig in, because when we do these top 10 lists, it always takes a little bit of time to get through them. Just a couple of quick honorable mentions for some films that fell just like under my top 10. I was a big fan of Saturday Night, Jason Reitman's film about the debut of Saturday Night Live, which is 50 years ago, if you can believe it. Big fan of A Real Pain from Jesse Eisenberg, who wrote, directed, and starred in it, along with Kieran Culkin. Really, really solid, funny, but kind of dark film. Furiosa, which bombed at the box office for some reason, which I still don't understand. Incredible action movie. As far as I'm concerned, there are no bad Mad Max saga movies, and this is definitely, you know, I think it's almost as good as Fury Road, and yet Fury Road got a million nominations. I don't think that we're going to see that with this film. And then film came back all the way back in January, Love Lies Bleeding, with Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien. Really, really, really solid film. Jeremy, did you have, before you get into your list, and I'm going to let you start off, did you have any honorable mentions you want to throw in there?
There's a couple that you mentioned that I really want to see. And the one with Culkin and Jesse Eisenberg, what's it called?
A Real Pain.
Yeah, that one, I kind of missed my radar. I saw the trailers, really wanted to check it out, and then just didn't get around to it. So that one I'm definitely adding to my list. But no. I actually didn't see a whole ton of movies this year, so it's almost more like ranking the ones that I saw that I really liked. And this, my number 10, as we get into this, is a little bit of a caveat on it. It is the film Late Night with the Devil, which actually did get a theatrical release in 2024, though it was made quite a bit earlier than that. It stars David Dasmalchian. It's kind of a cool spin on the possession genre. It's framed as kind of a found footage of the final broadcast of a late night show, similar to what you would see on Johnny Carson or something like that back in the 1970s. And it's just a lot of fun. There was a bit of controversy due to some use of artificial intelligence, which I think kind of overshadowed what a great film that it actually is, because that use of a couple of still AI images kind of tainted something that outside of that is just really well done, really well executed. It's a fun horror movie. I wouldn't say that it's scary, but it is definitely a good time. It's one that I watched at home on Shudder and just absolutely loved it. So I wanted to give it a shout out as my number 10.
Yeah, that's one I've been meaning to get around to and that I've heard nothing but good things about. This is the first time I'm hearing there was any AI controversy about that. I think the quality of the film has certainly overshadowed anything about that, because, like I said, this is the first time I've even heard about it.
Interesting. So.
But, you know, you get these people that are crusaders, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't be, but these people that are crusaders about AI, where they just want to burn it all down. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not taking a side on this, but... You know, I don't think in this case it overshadows the film. That's certainly not what I've seen out there. So my number 10 is also a horror movie. And it's one that I wasn't 100% sure that it was going to make my top 10 or not, but it just sneaks in there. And that is, and I know you haven't seen this yet, Jeremy, so I apologize, but it's Robert Eggers' remake of Nosferatu.
Oh, it made your top 10. I love to hear it.
Which just came out on Christmas Day. So I really have just seen this in the last couple of days. It really is a beautiful film. I'm a fan of the original Nosferatu, which is one of the most influential films ever made. It's a great silent film by F.W. Murnau. There was a remake in the 70s. And then now you've got Robert Eggers bringing his distinctive touch to this. And I like that he does a lot of stuff that he takes directly from the original silent film in terms of some of the way things are presented, some of the camera tricks and things like that. There's stuff that really dates back to the original film. But obviously this version is much more explicit than the original film, which came out in the 1920s or 1930s.
22.
Obviously there was no nudity in the original. There's no, there's a little bit of nudity in this. The vampire action is a little more graphic. There's more blood, more gore, that sort of thing. But it comes down to the performances are all fantastic in this movie. I think there was a lot of disappointment when it was announced that Anya Taylor-Joy wasn't able to do the movie and she was replaced with Lily Rose Depp.
Makes so much sense.
Lily Rose Depp is fantastic in this movie. She's
awesome.
She deserves any attention she gets from it. Everybody's really good. And Bill Skarsgård, you think, he's going to just do Pennywise. You're not even going to think about Pennywise in this movie.
I got two spoiler-free questions that I'm curious about. First of all, does Nosferatu look cool?
Yes.
All right, awesome. That was something that I was curious about. I don't want to look at any images. I just wanted to know if you liked the way
Not in the same way that Max Schreck did.
Interesting. Okay, so they did something a little different with it.
Yes.
Okay, next question. Dracula, in particular, obviously Nosferatu was an unlicensed adaptation of Bram Stoker's seminal vampire novel, kind of responsible for the vampire that we know and recognize today. It's also been adapted well over 300 times. Is there an aspect of the familiarity that may lessen the impact, and maybe it would have been higher on your list if you weren't so super familiar with the story beats?
I think maybe, but I don't think it's from Dracula. I think it's from being so familiar with Nosferatu.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. You could definitely look at this and say, okay, well, that's the Mina Harker character and that's the Van Helsing character and, whatever. But I think that Nosferatu changed enough to distinguish itself. And for me, it was thinking about this versus the original film.
Okay.
My only gripe with this film is it's a little slow.
Sure.
And it's a very minor gripe. It's an excellent film, and I'm glad to have it in my top 10. What's your number 9?
All right. So number 9, Zoe Kravitz, directorial debut. It stars Channing Tatum, among other people. It is called Blink Twice. Came out a little bit early in the year. Scratch that I even said that. I don't know when this movie came out. But
it's about mid-year, I think.
I went and saw it with my wife. Both of us really enjoyed it. It is a dark satire. Got some very, very heavy subject matter, but handled through a uniquely female voice and somebody like Zoe Kravitz that is an insider in every sense of the word with some very famous and influential parents. It's kind of interesting to see a critical look at the way that the industry works and the way that women are positioned in these pretty terrible roles in a systemic thing that is, tale as old as time, but it's smart. It takes a while to kind of reveal its hand, and when it does, it's just all out chaos. A lot of catharsis in the end of it. Highly recommend Blink Twice. I think it's a worthwhile and timely movie.
Cool. Yeah, I have not seen that one yet. That's been one I've been needing to get around to. So I'm looking forward to that. My number 9 is a movie I know you saw and liked too, Jeremy. I don't know if it's in your top 10 list or not, but Maxine.
Nice.
So this is Ty West wrapping up his trilogy, his very odd trilogy that started with the movie X a couple of years ago, and then Pearl, which was a prequel to X that goes into the story of the, for lack of a better term, the villain of the movie X. Maxine then takes back up with the final girl from X and follows her into this next film. And one of the things I really like about this trilogy is each of these films is very distinct, even though they are in the same universe. The first one is very much an old school slasher. The second one is kind of like a more typical A24 historical with some horror elements to it. And then this one is like an 80s revenge thriller. And it's set in the 80s. It's set in L.A. in the 80s. I got to see it in L.A., which was kind of a nice serendipitous boost for the film for me. But
yes.
But it's very much in the vein of something like Death Wish or the 80s movie Angel, which was, I think, maybe the film it has the most in common with. Very much a revenge thriller, but upping the horror gore content beyond what those films showed back in that day. I just think Ty West is brilliant. I'm here for anything he does from here on out, and really love this film.
Mia Goth is incredible. This one just missed my top 10 and probably definitely could have been in the honorable mentions category. Aesthetically, it's firing on all cylinders. It's a very stylish and cool movie. I love the choice of music that they used. The fact that you saw it in L.A., I'm sure, adds an extra layer of appreciation to it. I can imagine that being a great experience. But yeah, got to sing the praises of Mia Goth. Not only was she great in Ty West's trilogy, but she also did really good work in that movie with Alexander Skarsgård that came out this year. The name is escaping me right now. Actually, that was last year. But it was also
you're
really
thinking
good.
Of Infinity
so shout
Pool.
Out to Mia Goth.
Yeah, you're thinking of
what
Infinity Pool. That was last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Serendipitously, the day I saw that film earlier that day, I was in a building that was featured in the film. So it was like just one of those great things. Similarly, I got to see Saturday Night in New York City right after I had just been at 30 Rock. So, you know, it's nice when you get those opportunities. We're going to have to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. Another song that was just inescapable this year, Too Sweet by Hozier. And these are kind of the movies that were too sweet that we're talking about right now, our top 10 films of the year. So, Jeremy, come back in with your number 8.
This movie should have been titled r/Atheist. It is the movie Heretic, and it stars Hugh Grant, and it is a movie about two Mormon girls that visit a man's house hoping to kind of evangelize, maybe get him to join the Church of Latter-day Saints. And it's a horror film, very dialogue heavy, very character driven, and philosophically it's really interesting. I think it's another movie that came out this year that does a really good job. It's like, it's not a plot heavy movie as much as it's just a really interesting conversational piece. And I've heard people in the Mormon community fallen out of the Mormon community that thought it was a much more anti-religious message than I took from it. I think what's cool is you can walk out of the movie and kind of put your own, like, it stays ambiguous. I don't think it's preaching anti-religion. In fact, I think that there's a nice way that it handles that. But yeah, it's a very, very good performance by Hugh Grant, who is just one of those guys that has had this kind of late career renaissance, and I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, got both Golden Globes and, to my surprise, a Critics' Choice Award nomination for his role in this movie. And, you know, not out of the conversation for the Oscar race either. I think the odds makers kind of have him outside looking in right now, but it's entirely possible we could see a Best Actor nomination for him out of this movie. I have not seen this yet. I have been wanting to. I've heard nothing but good things about this movie, and I know it's in a few of my friends' top 10 lists for the year. So very much looking forward to seeing that as soon as I possibly can. My number 8, it's a movie I'm kind of surprised ended up in my top 10 for the year, because in the lead up to it coming out, I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it, but a really strong movie that stuck with me throughout the year, and that's Challengers.
Yeah.
I am not a tennis guy. I'm not really a sports guy, and it's interesting. I always end up liking sports movies than
They're
I end
so
up
good.
Liking sports themselves. and this movie is no exception. But this movie is not just about tennis. It's about the interpersonal relationships between three tennis players. Kind of anchored. This is very much Zendaya's film. She is the center of this film. She's the one that's on the poster. She's, you know, very much the center of this love triangle between her and these two male tennis players. And just really does a great job with the tension between all these three actors, the performances, and directed by Luca Guadagnino. Am I pronouncing that right? Do you know?
Guadagnino, maybe.
Yeah. I just think it's an excellent film. Was, again, surprised to see this in the Golden Globe nominations this year. Weirdly nominated in the comedy musical category. I don't really think of it as a comedy. I think of it as more of a romantic drama / sports movie. But you know, I'm just glad it's got the recognition. And yeah, that's my number 8. So what's your number 7, Jeremy?
Number 7, remake, actually. And it's interesting when movies that are remakes show up on any top 10 list. But James McAvoy carries this movie. It's called Speak No Evil. And it is just so very well done. It's a dark comedy horror film. No supernatural elements, anything like that. More of a thriller. But, you know, these kind of classifications can be arbitrary at times, because at its core, it is horrific. And it's about a family that goes and visits a family that they met on vacation at their estate on the English countryside. And these really interesting kind of dynamics about social niceties and how far we will let people push our boundaries, especially when we're in their environment. And James McAvoy, he's not a big physically imposing guy, but between this movie and Split, I think there's a case to be made that he is able to tap into something just so intimidating and threatening and scary while also being like super charismatic. I think Speak No Evil, the American version, actually supersedes the original, and mostly on the level of the performances. However, there's a much more cathartic ending in the American one versus the just oppressive bleakness of the original. But if I were going to say pick one, I would say watch the American version of Speak No Evil, my number 7.
Interesting. The trailers for that movie just put me off so bad.
I get it. I thought this, I was like, they showed the entire movie in the trailers. And it's kind of true. They kind of did show the whole movie in the trailers, which is unfortunate. Happened with Abigail, which could also be in my honorable mentions. But yeah, this movie rocks, Julio.
Yeah, Abigail is just right outside my honorable mentions, too. I really like that film.
Yeah.
My number 7, I have to imagine, is somewhere on your list as well, Jeremy. And that is, it was not a good year for comic book movies. In fact, I would say it goes so far as to say the two worst movies I've seen this year were comic book movies. But also one of the best ones I've seen this year, and that one was Deadpool and Wolverine.
Love it.
I just, you know, this movie is, and I will fully recognize that some of this movie being in my top 10 is my inherent love of the genre. Some of it is the nostalgia of looking back at the Fox era films and some other films that were thrown in there with it as well, like Blade, et cetera, et cetera. So there's some of that, but I also think there's just enough freshness in there to that this stands on its own. Like, I think that, you know, even if you put aside the trappings of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which this is part of, it's just seeing Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds play off of each other. It is seeing all the fun you can have with the multiverse when you don't take it too seriously. Yeah, I just love this movie.
Unintentional omission on my part. Absolutely.
Really?
Honorable mention. Yeah, yeah. One of the more fun movies that I saw at the theater this year. So I'm going to throw Deadpool and Wolverine and The Fall Guy both in that honorable mention. Just a really good time at the movies. And there, the opening sequence of Deadpool and Wolverine alone was just, you knew you were in for a good time. So,
well,
absolutely loved it.
And Fall Guy is right there with Abigail. Like, literally, like, if you go down my list, right after my honorable mentions, those are the next two films. So,
yeah.
Okay, so what's your number six?
My number six is a movie that I had to sit with for a little bit. I think the craftsmanship is unmatched. I think Alex Garland is just an incredible filmmaker and one that everybody should keep an eye on because I think he has great things ahead of him, and that is the movie Civil War, which is absolutely a horror movie. A lot of my list is very heavily skewed towards horror films, and I think this is no exception. Probably one of the most legitimately horrifying movies on the list, and it didn't sit well with me. When I got out of it, I was uncomfortable, and it was not what I would say was like a, it's by no means a feel-good movie. It's not like a stand-up-and-cheer movie. It's not a good feeling, and that's kind of the point, I think. And so it took me a little while to come around and realize, like, no, it did exactly what it set out to do, and it did it incredibly well. Civil War is my number six.
So I think that there is a heroic element to that movie, and I think that it is that journalists can be heroic. And I think that's something that gets ignored in this day and age where we want to blame the media for everything we don't like. I think very much in this case, the characters played by especially Kirsten Dunst and Kaylee Spaney are very heroic.
Oh, boy, it did not hit me that way, but that's another reason why it's good.
But I was a journalist for 20 years.
Yeah,
it's gonna hit me that way. This is on my list as well. It's further up my list. I'm very angry about the fact that this movie, I think, came out too early in the year and is now being ignored in the award season. I think Kirsten Dunst should be in the best actress conversation. Kaylee Spaney should be in the best supporting actress conversation, and this film should be in the best picture conversation. And I'm very, very angry that people seem to have forgotten about it. But I also think that if it had come out any later, it would be colored too much by the election, and it kind of already was. So I'm a little iffy on this. My number six is a film that is, I'm sure, not going to be on your top 10, Jeremy, because I know you did not like it as much as I did. And that's Wicked.
Yeah.
I really love this film. It really has stuck with me. I'm really looking forward to part two next year. And I really think the performances are fantastic. In particular, Ariana Grande as Glinda, but also Cynthia Erivo as Elphaba. The songs are fantastic. The production is fantastic. There's nothing I don't like about this movie. There's a reason it's so popular, pun intended. And we're going to definitely hear more about this one as awards season approaches. We've got to take a break. We'll be back with the rest of our lists in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
5, 6, 5, 6, 7, 8. Take
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube, and we are talking about the movies that were hot to go this year, our top 10 movies for the year, as expressed by that Chapel Run song, one of the big hits this year. So, Jeremy, hit me with your number five, please.
Here we are in the top five, baby. Paul Gallner, he always picks really interesting movies. I feel like this is a really good companion piece to Blink Twice. So if you haven't seen those movies, I recommend watching them together. Do like a double feature. But this is Willa Fitzgerald's movie. Super cool.
And what's that film called again?
It's called Strange Darling.
Strange Darlings. Okay.
Did I not say that? My bad.
Yeah. So my number five is another movie that just came out just this week. So maybe there's some recency bias in here, but I really, really loved the new Bob Dylan biopic, A Complete Unknown. Just, again, fantastic performances in this film. Timothée Chalamet, who's definitely in the best actor conversation, just disappears into the role of Bob Dylan. Also, very similarly, Edward Norton just completely becomes the legendary folk singer Pete Seeger in this movie. Such a great performance. And Monica Barbaro, who you may best know for her role in Top Gun Maverick, best thing in that movie as far as I was concerned, just as Joan Baez in this movie, is just luminary. Elle Fanning's also in this. She's really great. The fact that it manages to build tension around stuff that you know is going to come, because if you know Dylan's story, you know where things are going to some extent, is nothing short of phenomenal. Some of the most tense moments in this movie are leading up to the famous Dylan Goes Electric performance at the Norfolk Film Festival. The Folk Festival in 1965, where Dylan famously performed Electric and people lost their minds. It's a really great film. James Mangold did such a great job with Walk the Line a few years back. This is an even better biopic than that film was. And I know there are some out there quibbling about some of the accuracy, some of the stuff in this movie. This isn't a documentary.
Who cares?
Yeah, but it is a great film, and it's definitely worth seeing.
While we're on the Chalamet train, why not throw in Dune 2?
Is that your number four?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Denis Villeneuve is arguably the best filmmaker working today. I think there's a conversation to be had that he and Christopher Nolan just make movies better than everybody else. If you're into the Dune universe, this is like no big surprise. It's a middle chapter, so I can see it being a little, anticlimactic. It's not quite telling the same kind of full story, but visually stunning. I love everything that Villeneuve does, and I love the kind of complexities and moral nuances of the story, and can't wait to see where it wraps up. So that's my number four.
See, I love Villeneuve too, but that movie just does not resonate with me the way it does with other people. Like, I don't have that, like, that's below the honorable mention stuff that I've talked about. It's not in the radar for me to be, like, I could see where it's going to win technical awards, but That's kind of where I fall out there. My number four is a film that I didn't really think I wanted to see, and then I saw it and absolutely loved it. And that's Conclave. And I think part of the problem with this film is the way that it was marketed, is that it's marketed as this very serious drama. And it certainly has that element to it. But this is a really funny movie. This is a dark comedy. And it has something to say, and it is about something that people may not be that interested in. It's about the selection of a new pope. It is a funnier movie than you think it's going to be. It's more interesting than you think it's going to be. And it's just filled with great performances. My top two male performances of the year are definitely Chalamet in A Complete Unknown and Ralph Fiennes in this movie.
Awesome. Yeah. Can't wait to talk about it a little bit more after I see it. My number three is Saturday Night. You mentioned it as an honorable mention. I think it's a bunch of really great performances, led by an ensemble, as it should be. Good insights into all the characters, and it kind of a celebration of when SNL was a bit more counterculture, a little bit more subversive, and I think they just captured the energy really well, and it was a good watch.
I love this movie a lot. It just barely missed my top 10. Especially loved Rachel Sennett in it. who I think is just amazing, and I can't wait to see her new HBO series that's going to be coming out in 2025. Very much looking forward to pretty much everything she does. I think she's fantastic. My number three is one that you already talked about, Jeremy, Civil War. I, again, think this should be an awards contention, and I'm very mad that it's not. So what's your number two?
Number two is Coraline Fargeau's The Substance. This is a movie that has been heavily discussed this year, especially in the horror community. And it's because it is just so dang good. And the fact that it's actually getting like awards attention just kind of shows that we are in a different era when a movie that feels so heavily influenced by like Brian Yuzna or David Cronenberg is in the conversation for, you know, Best Picture is wild. Demi Moore is incredibly good in it. And I just think it's a super stylish movie. I can't wait to see what this director does next after Revenge. And then this movie, she's on a hot streak. And, this is a movie that is super aesthetically pleasing. It's gory. It's funny. It's fun. It's got, you know, deep themes. I just think it's a really good movie. And I was excited to see that it actually resonated with people.
Not just Demi Moore, but Margaret Qualley is amazing in this movie as well.
Awesome.
They really are playing, and this may be a little bit of a spoiler, so I apologize if you haven't seen this movie yet. You should absolutely see this movie. This is on my list too. Basically playing different parts of the same character.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way. It's going to be really interesting to see if they both get Oscar nominations, and it'll be really interesting to see if only one of them wins. I'm really curious as to how that's going to play out. I kind of feel like it may not be either one of their years to win, just because there's so much other strong stuff out there. But the performances in this movie are outstanding. This film is kind of over the top in a way that some people won't appreciate. But I think that what it has to say and the way it goes about saying it is just so fantastic. And it's really interesting to me because, I'll be honest with you. I am lucky enough to be able to, as I go on the radio and talk about movies every week on Andrew McKay's show, I don't pay to see most movies I see. This movie was playing when I was out of town. And I actually paid to see it. It's the only movie that is on my list this year that I actually shelled out my own money to see.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's that in and of itself. The fact that I shelled out to see this movie, and it is, I'll just go ahead and say it. It's my number one movie of the year. So spoilers for the end of the list here, but we're kind of at the end of the list right now. Because I only have one film left after this. The Substance is amazing. And I love that it's getting the critical love. I do think it's probably going to be limited mostly to nominations and not actual awards.
Yeah.
Prove me wrong, people. Please, by all means, prove me wrong. But I'm really glad that it's getting the recognition. The other film that I'm really glad is getting the recognition, and the one that I think actually has a good shot at winning Best Picture, possibly. It's definitely like one of the top two films in contention for Best Picture. Definitely has a very good shot at winning Best Actress and probably getting a couple of other acting nominations, maybe a directing nomination, maybe a screenplay nomination. And that is Anora.
Mm-hmm.
Another film that is, and I think that, you know, a lot of my films that I love this year are very dark, but very funny and very satirical. I think you could say that about Conclave. You could say that about The Substance. And I think you can say that about this film as well. This film is a little more overtly comedic than some of the other ones are, but it is very funny, and it is just anchored by this absolutely killer performance by Mikey Madison, who, if you know her at all before this, you maybe know her best for Scream 5.
A small role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which also had Margot Qualley in it.
Yeah, that's Margot true. Qualley. That's true. But she's just phenomenal in this. And I knew she was great in the movie when I saw it, but I realized even more recently, having seen an interview with her on one of the morning shows recently, I think it was on Good Morning America, but I don't remember for sure which one it was, where she was, you know, speaking as herself and talking about the part and everything. And like, you wouldn't know it was the same woman.
Yeah. You had mentioned that. I'm really excited to see Anora. I got to throw in my number one, and then we'll wrap this thing up. My number one is a movie that it's weird, and if you don't love it, I totally get it, but it's Long Legs.
Okay.
Osgood Perkins, man, another one that I just really think people should keep an eye on. He's done nothing but really good movies. They might be a little esoteric, might keep audiences at a little bit of a distance, just kind of due to his directing style. But I thought this movie was so cool and surreal, and the way that the lighting kind of captures the atmosphere, and it's fun. I would love to kind of discuss it more with people because it does seem to be a bit more divisive, but I thought Long Legs was incredibly well-done movie.
Just below Fall Guy and just above Dune Part 2 on my list. Just
barely. Oh, good. I was wondering.
Yeah, so it's in there, but it's not, you know, it's not in the honorable mention zone. Again, my number one is The Substance, and we've got to go. Hope you have a great new year, and we will look forward to talking to you much more in 2025. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.